Would you please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Tonight our 40-minute speaker is Cindy C. from San Clemente.
My name's Cindy Cicchini, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from Laguna Niguel. And my sobriety date is November 2nd, 1986. So in a couple weeks, I'm going to be sobered for 23 years. And I'm excited, yeah. And my home group is the South Coast Speakers Meeting on Wednesday nights in Laguna Beach. And I have a sponsor. Her name is Cheryl, and she's been my sponsor for 22 and a half years. She's been my sponsor. And I want to say that if you don't like people that cry, you're not going to like me, because I'm one of those people that Alcoholics Anonymous takes my breath away. It really does what happens to people like us. And happy birthday, Elena. Everybody's talking about you. All over Orange County, they're talking about you. They've been talking about you for a week. Everyone's talking about Elena's birthday. She's 35. Congratulations. And it's so nice to have people like that walking before us. And I was talking to Chris at the break, and before the meeting, and he was saying something. I forget what he said, but he said something like, "Oh, you don't want to talk to me. You want to think about what you're going to say." And I said, "No, no, no. I don't want to think about what I'm going to say." That's the worst thing to do when I start thinking about me. That's the worst thing. So I'm going to tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And welcome to the people from out of town. So I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the city of champions. And I knew I liked you, and as soon as you walked in. But I grew up in a house with a nice red brick house with a white picket fence. And I have a mom and a dad, and I have an older brother. He's 6 years older than me. And I grew up in one of those houses that always looked really perfect. You know, we had our picket fence was perfect. In fact, our fence had these rings on it. And then poles in the ground, and when my dad was cutting the grass on Saturday, he would lift the fence up and put it over to the side and cut the grass underneath the fence and then put it back on the ring, on the poles, you know. It was before weed whackers, I guess, and it just looked perfect, you know, and he'd clean up the cars, and then you know, our family would have dinner, and my dad would get all cleaned up, and then my dad on Saturday would go out with another woman. And that caused the little problems in our house, and this was like in the 60s, and it was the time when there was only one phone in our house. We had a phone like on the kitchen wall, and a lot of times the phone would ring, and if my dad didn't answer the phone, the person would hang up. And usually my mother wouldn't say anything, but sometimes she'd say something, and then there would be a fight, and you know, the phone might get pulled off the wall, or my dad would slam the door and it would come off the... just madness. And, you know, I don't think that's why I'm alcoholic, but that's just the kind of house I lived in. And my dad is... But then on Sunday morning, we'd all get up and we'd get in that car, we'd go to church, and we'd sit in church with the other people from our neighborhood and our families, and we could never know there was anything wrong at our house. And my dad's also one of those people that if you could do something, he could do it better. So I'm his kid, so whatever he could do, you know, it's like, seriously, when my dad would take us to the pool in the summer, he'd be on the high dive, and everybody in the pool would go, "Hey, hey, it's that guy, watch this," because he was just like a little showman, you know. And and when you're his kid, you have to do that too. Like he'd just the way it is. But also, I was born without my left hand, and I have a prosthesis on tonight, and I know it looks really good. It should for $20,000. And the other night, above our laundry, like, you know, where the washer and dryer is in the laundry room, I have some workout clothes because I go to the gym early in the morning. I don't want to bother my husband. And I had a hand in there too, for if I was going to ride my bike, and I'd take out clothes and it would roll out. And So I put it in a laundry basket and took it upstairs. And I just put it in this drawer in this armoire we have that's kind of high the other night. And Mike's like, what's in that drawer? And I said, oh, like four hands. And so, you know, it's kind of weird having one hand. And I came to AA and I heard people in here talk about feeling different. And I seriously sat here and when I heard that, I thought, I never felt different. You know, I always felt just as good as everyone. I just felt the same. And I consciously thought that. But the longer I sat here, and the more sober I got, and I don't know how it happened, I don't know when it happened or what happened, but I know that I know that I always must have felt different, you know. And because when you have one hand, you know, a lot of you see me around, and I usually have one hand. And I'll tell you a couple of stories, and maybe you've heard me say this before, and this happened right down the street here at this farmer's market. And I was in there one day after going to the gym, actually, and I'm in there, and I'm putting groceries in a little bag. And this guy goes, he walks up behind me, and he goes, were you in the service? And I go to myself, that guy's talking to you, Cindy. So I turn around, and I go, no, I wasn't. And he goes, a lot of people walking around like you today. And I think, you know, is that a compliment? I don't know, but it just sounded kind of weird. But I know, I just said, you know, kind of whatever, and went and checked out. And very same day, I went home, took a shower, went to have my nails done, and this gal's doing my nails, and she said, what happened to your hand? And I said, nothing. I was born without my left hand. And she said, has it been a long time? You know, like, it's just... whatever. And I was getting on a plane one day in an airport, a total stranger woman came up to me and she said, what happened to your hand? I said, nothing, I was born without my hand. And she said, was there anything else wrong? It's I don't know, but before I got here and before I worked the steps and before I did those esteemable acts that we do here, like show up and make coffee and be the secretary and those kind of things, if you ask me what happened to my hand, I would have to say I was born without my hand, but I'm okay and I could do this and blah 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 blah, and I had to make you be okay with me, you know. I had to make sure that you were okay with me, and like I said, from being here, I'm okay with you, and I'm okay with you, and I'm okay with people, and I try to find the good in people, and I know God's okay with me, and I'm okay with me. So it just happened here, and I don't know what all that has to do, but it's kind of a big deal having one hand, really. And I can't believe that people with two hands can't write with both hands. I just can't get over it, that you have two hands and you can't use them both at the same time, because I would be busy. I get a lot done with one hand, and Mike, and if I had two, oh boy. But anyhow, I don't think that's why I'm an alcoholic, though. I just, you know, that's just who I am. And so I grew up in this house, and my parents were kind of strict, and I went to high school in the 70s, and on Friday night, we would drink a little bit at Boone's Farm and Strawberry Hill or Ripple. I don't know if they still make that, but I loved it and would drink a little bit of that, and I took mescaline once and giggled and acted goofy, and I always did that so no one even knew. And then I got out of high school and I went to college in Pennsylvania, and as soon as I got there, I'm a party girl. I just love to party. Would you open this for me? And I got there and I drank every chance I could get, and I got out of that school by the skin of my teeth. Thank you. And I went back home to live with my parents. And I got a job at U.S. Steel because I was from Pittsburgh. I have a degree in psychology. I have a bachelor's degree. I remember nothing. All I remember is people in close quarters get into a lot of arguments because they don't have their personal space. And that's it. That's all I remember. And So I got a job at U.S. Steel, and I worked shifts like 7 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon to 11, and 11 to 7 in the morning. It didn't matter what time I got off work, I was in the bar. And I was in this place called like Radsky's Place, or that was the name of the bar, or I don't know, the Tube, or whatever. And my car was parked outside, and I live in a small town, and my dad was a manager in that steel mill. My uncle Art, who lived next door, was a manager. Another uncle of mine worked there. Our church was down the street. My mother went to the credit union, and I never thought about how my actions affected those people and how that looked, you know. And I'm the kind of girl that I could, once I'm in a bar, if it's 7 a.m., and I'm drinking at 9 o'clock, I could be standing out there like talking to a guy like it's nighttime, you know. And that's not a pretty sight for a girl that's in her early 20s. But that's what I do. And I had no dreams. I didn't have career goals. There was no goals. Shopping was a goal. Shopping and partying. And what happened in 1980, the Steelers were coming to the Super Bowl, and so was I. And they were coming to play the Rams in Pasadena, and I talked these two girls in a bar into driving out here with me. And these girls reported to my father in that steel mill. And I remember I got a case of Iron City beer, and I got some speed, and we got some weed. And, you know, we were driving to California. We were here in like 2.5 days. And these poor girls, they wanted to stop, and I just wanted to go. And I dropped them off at a hotel somewhere near Garden Grove, and I went to stay with friends of mine from college. And we went to that game that night, that Sunday night, and it was crazy because, you know, I was there. And then the other people I knew from Pittsburgh were going to party at this club in Marina Del Rey. And so we went there. The Steelers were going to be there. And then everyone was going to this other club. And meanwhile, these girls that I brought, they've never been to California. They thought they were coming here, you know, to go to the game. And, you know, three girls. And I had a goal. I was coming to this game, and I was staying here. And I said to them, okay, we're all going to this other club. And you know how girls are, or people are, like, wait a minute, let me get my purse, or let me go to the restroom, or whatever. But see, I'm like this. When I'm going, I'm going. And if you're not there, you're just slowing me down anyways. And I really remember driving away from that club and looking in the rearview mirror and seeing them at the door of that club like, and I'm not proud of that. But that's the kind of friend I am. I just leave you. And I just thought, you know, good. And the next day they came to my girlfriend's house to get their luggage that was in my trunk. And they gave me that look, you know, that look. And all I could think is, why don't they just get out of here? I didn't think about what they were going to say to my dad when they went home. And, you know, one more time, how my actions were affecting other people. I just never even thought of it. I just thought about me. And that's why today, the less I think about me and the more I think about you, the better off I am. But I stayed here, and my parents came out here, and they were like, what are you doing? What? You got to come home. And I just said, well, I'm going to get a job. And I got a job, and I stayed here. And I got a job. I was thinking about today at an oil tool company in the City of Commerce. And this was like in 1980, and things were booming. And I was in my early 20s. And, you know, it was a time when if you made your numbers, I worked in operations always. And like the general manager would take everybody out for drinks and dinner, and I had a great time. I was having a really good time. I'm a party girl. But now I'm going home, and I wake up and I throw up all over myself because I vomit on myself at night. But I never think that it's alcoholism. But that's what it was. It was, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I just love to drink, and we would go out at lunchtime and drink. And I like vodka and tonic at lunchtime, like a couple doubles. And I had a boyfriend at that job, and he was a really nice guy. He was, we did nice things that people did, you know, people that are dating do. We went skiing and to the movies and to dinner and yada yada. And but now I'm at the point where there's just not enough for me. There's not enough attention for me, and I always have to watch that. There's just not enough attention for me. And I would come out of a restroom, say, and we're at a wedding, and he's talking to another gal, and I'm like, you know, I come out, and he introduces me, and I say, like, who's that? And he goes, or he'll say, like, you know, this is Betty. She's getting married to John next week, and she's telling me about the honeymoon. And she walks away, and then I go, like, who was that? And he says, well, that was Betty. And then he tries to say, you know, they're going to Hawaii or something, but I can't let it go. It's like, well, you said you were going to be right there. Well, I was talking to her and John, and I just can't let it go. And I have to keep beating it, you know. And so the poor person, they're like, it's no big deal, but I have to keep saying something. And then I just say what I always say, screw you, who needs you anyways? And I leave. And I go home, and I pass out, and then I wake up, and I call it the Chappaquiddick syndrome. I wake up, and I go, did it happen, or didn't it happen? Because I could just imagine. And I go, did it happen, or didn't it happen? And then I get that sick feeling, you know. Oh, that feeling. And then you call them, and they take you back, and then after a couple times, they, you know, they don't answer the phone anymore. And what I do is I take a drink. You know, and once I take a drink and I take another drink, then it's screw you, who needs you anyways. And that's what I do. I do that. I drink to solve the problem caused by my drinking. And that job, I was laid off or something, and I'm living in Belmont Shores or Belmont Heights up there in Long Beach, and I had this great job at Douglas Aircraft. I was in this management training program there, and if my life depended on it, I couldn't tell you what I did. Like, really, I couldn't tell you what I did there. I remember the guy that hired me. His name was Larry Lomax, and I know the day he hired me because he told me when he fired me that he smelled alcohol when I went for the interview. But, you know, I'm working there, and I'm at this club in Long Beach, and I think now it's an AA club. It was called Panache. It was and it was Halloween. It was like next weekend, actually. And I go in there, and I'm dressed in this full-on space suit, and I walk in, and there's this guy at the bar, and he's going, oh God, you know, I need to leave this scene. I need a good woman. And I walk in, and it was just love at first sight, you know, and two Elkies, and we were off, and it was just a party. And he drank that 151 rum, and I love that stuff. And if you're not done, have some 151, because that stuff will get you here. I wrecked cars all the time. I was always wrecking cars, but I was wrecking them faster, like just a faster clip. I had this nice little RX-7. It was really cute, pretty car. And one of the headlights, you know, those hit, one light was always broken. It was just like, it wanted to be right, but it just couldn't get it. And poor thing. And it was on a frame shaker, which means like you really banged up your car bad twice. And so anyhow, I met this guy, and I'm drinking. Now I'm drinking. I need to drink before work. I'm the kind of person that I drink before work, and I'm always sweating. And if I don't have anything left from the night before, I put on a raincoat and I go to this boys' market. It was on the corner of Redondo and Anaheim. And I put a raincoat on and I go in there. They start selling alcohol in California at 6 a.m. And I have to tell the clerk, like, it's someone's birthday at work, you know, that, because he cares. And I do that, and I go home and mix up some drinks, and I go to work. And at lunchtime, just a half pint of vodka. I love those half pints. Gulp, 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 gulp. Out the car window, and I get that warm sweat going and that feeling, you know. And I'm right. When I have a half pint, that's perfect. I heard someone say this at a meeting the other day, that someone said to them, like, why did you buy a half pint? why don't you just buy like a big bottle? It's true. They're easy to get rid of. You just drink that half pint and then it's gone, and it's just easy. And so that's what I do. And I went into work one morning and these bosses came from another building and I was a mess. And they said, we want to take you to the infirmary. We think you've been drinking. And they, I left my badge and I left. Now, I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I should have said, working at Douglas, I'm an alcoholic. I need help. But I didn't know anything. And I left there and they were probably so happy because I left my badge. And I went home and I needed a drink. So I drank some more. And it was Friday, and I needed to go back and get my check because it was Friday. So I went back, and then on the way back to my apartment, I wrecked my car into the tunnel that's underneath the Long Beach Airport. And the police came, and my alcohol content was 0.32, and it was like 11 o'clock in the morning. And I thought I was fine. And I went to jail, and I got out about 5, and one of the policemen drove me home because he was dating one of the girls in my apartment building. And I got home, and my boyfriend was playing softball in Seal Beach, and I went to the game. Now, I've been to work. I've been drunk. I've been to work. I've been drunk again. I've been in jail, and I'm in the same clothes. I'm a mess. I'm just a mess. And drunk again, and I'm at the game, and I felt like I was going to pass out. And I'm the kind of girlfriend that when I felt like I was passing out, and it didn't matter where we are, we could be wherever, the fair, and I would remember where your car is in the parking lot, and I would just lay on the hood of your car. So I went after this game, he's playing softball, and I just thought, oh, I'm going to pass out. So I went out to his car, and I propped myself up on the hood, and I put my head on the windshield, right, and pass out, and he came out, and he said, like, this is it, I can't take it, and you're an alcoholic. And he took me home and he dropped me off, and the next morning I woke up and I had that, you know, that feeling that, ugh. And I called my dad in Pittsburgh. My parents were divorced and by then, but our family we're a pretty close family. My brother was living in San Fernando Valley, and I called my dad and I said, I think I have a problem with alcohol, and I'm going to kill myself. I think I need help. My dad had given me a gun to protect myself, and I was going to shoot myself, or so I told him. And the next thing I know, the Long Beach police are at my house, and I'm like, who called you? And because I didn't know what happened. Like, was I, you know, and he said, your father. And it was just a big mess. And they called, it was a Saturday morning, like a tomorrow morning. And my brother, who's a really decent guy, and my brother loves his little sister. And they called my brother. My brother had had all the stuff to tile his bathroom that day. You know how, like, we do those projects at home, and it's like a big deal. You go to Home Depot, and you buy all that crap, and you get it together. And the Long Beach police call, and he they're with his sister, and she has a gun, and she's a drunk, and he's living in, I don't know, like San Fernando Valley. He had to drive all the way down. And then his wife came later. They weren't married at the time. They're married now. And she had to put everything away. And she came down, and the police are there. And my brother walked in, and he looked at me, and he said, please go get dressed. And just that embarrassment that was on his face. I remember that all I thought about is, why are they doing this to me? You know, why is everyone picking on me? Why don't they just leave me alone? I never thought about my brother, how his heart must have been broken and how embarrassed he must have been. And my dad, he doesn't know anything about alcoholism. He doesn't know about what you do with a daughter that's alcoholic. And that was a Saturday, and I think I don't know what happened. My brother might have stayed with me that night, and my dad was here the next day on Sunday, and my mother was probably freaking out in Pittsburgh because she's just hearing what's going on. And my dad stayed with me, and he walked me through that court stuff. But what happened when he got there is we had friends of our family in Pittsburgh called my dad and said to take me to the Pacific Group. this doctor in Pittsburgh knew Clancy, and he said to take me there. And my dad had never been to AA. I didn't want to go to AA, but I went, and I know what I wore. Because it's all about that. And my dad, because I had wrecked that car. This was like the last time this car was wrecked up, and it was going to go on a frame shaker. This is what my dad said to me. Just leave that car. It'll go down the street sideways now. And I never saw that car after I wrecked it. I just don't even know what happened. I just left it. And so my dad, he had to buy a car to go there. And I'm drinking all the whole time. You know what? And it's that kind of like, okay, my dad's taking a nap. I'm gonna run across the street to. Madness, that trying to sneak bottles in, and just it's so much madness. Oh, it's a lot of work. And my dad took me to that meeting, and he and Clancy were standing outside, and my dad, he doesn't know, and he's saying to Clancy, well, what can we do? Can we get our job back? And Clancy's like, I don't know. And he goes, my dad goes, well, what can I do? And Clancy goes to my dad, there's not a goddamn thing you could do. She's got to do it. And I thought, well, that's kind of cold, you know. I didn't know anything about it. And Clancy sat me down, like, it kind of in front to the side over here. And he sat me next to this gal that was from Lakewood. And maybe thinking that I was living in Long Beach and she's from Lakewood, we would be friends. And she was really pretty, I remember, and she was pregnant, and she was with her husband. And when they asked for newcomers, she raised my hand, and my dad bought me a big book. And we went home, and, you know, I didn't. And I remember the next day sitting at the pool, because I couldn't work, and I'd been fired. And I'm sitting at the pool reading the big book. And when, I don't know about you, but when you're not wanting it, and you're drunk, and you're looking at that book, I wasn't getting it at all. But I'm sitting out there with a big alcohol. You know how it says Alcoholics Anonymous. My dad comes out and he goes, you know, maybe you should take the cover off that book. But it never dawned on me, you know. And it's not like anybody in that apartment building didn't know I was alcoholic. But I'm sure they knew. It was always some kind of drama. You know that drama? So, my dad walked me through that court stuff, and he took me back to Pennsylvania, and they put me in a 28-day treatment program. And my mom and him, and I got out, and I thought I had it. You know, when I was in there, I thought I had it a little bit. But I heard in there about drinking NyQuil and Listerine, and I didn't know anything about that. And in Pennsylvania, it's a lot different than drinking here. Like, we have those state-controlled liquor stores. It's different than here. Like, here you could buy alcohol anywhere, and there it's just in a bar or in a liquor store. And and the liquor stores are like 5 miles, 10 miles apart. It's not like every corner, you know. And so I'm living there, and I'm trying to get these half pints. I get out of there, and I went to some meetings, but then I just couldn't keep it together, and I started drinking NyQuil. And I was getting loaded, and I would drink that vodka whenever I could. I was drinking Listerine every day. I was ridiculous. It was so embarrassing. And that was one of the things I was never going to tell anybody. I was so ashamed. And one time I went to a 7-Eleven. I bought a bottle of Listerine. And, I mean, I don't even know if I ever told anybody this. Maybe my sponsor. But the gal behind the counter said, do you want a straw? That's who I am. That's who I am without AA. And that's who I wanted to be. I was living for that, you know. And I stunk so bad. And this retired couple would pick me up every night and take me to a meeting. And meetings back there are really good. There's good AA in Pittsburgh. And I went to a meeting every night. And I wanted to be sober, but I couldn't be sober. I just thought I could never be sober. But I went every night. Sometimes they would. My parents weren't home. Well, I was living with my mom in our family house. My dad had another house, but they would come into the house and like shake me and get me up and take me to a meeting. And I went for 14 months from like September to, or October to November, and drunk all the time, stinking like Listerine, stinking like alcohol. They never said nothing to me. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. Only here. Anywhere else, they'd be judging and say, they picked me up every night. And people in meetings did tell me to shut up, though. If I was talking and stuff, they'd say, shut up. And I'd shut up. But I one night, it was November 1st, I went to bed, and I saw my mom that night. You know, my mom looked so sad. She, like, was gray. She looked so sad. I was just hell to be with. Just hell. I remember leaving the house with wet hair, and she said, I don't know about California, Cindy, but women your age don't go out of the house with wet hair here. And I just needed to get out of there and go buy some Listerine, you know? It was just, I was a mess. And I went to bed and I said, I want to be sober. And the next day I woke up and I went to 3 meetings, and that was November 2nd, and I haven't had a drink since then. And I don't know what happened that day. I was just graced with sobriety. And I'm very grateful for that. I stayed in Pennsylvania for 6 months. I worked at a company that a couple in AA owned, where you spray cologne in the mall. I got sober in November. In December, I was like working at, say, Macy's. I had a full-on reindeer outfit. Reindeer, big head, big crown head, big ears, and a big red nose. I had these big paws. And if you bought Polo cologne, you got to have your picture taken with me. And it was so far. I got paid $6 an hour. I loved it. And I have a picture of myself in that outfit. And so I worked there, and then after 6 months, that boyfriend, we were talking, and he knew I was sober, and he said, why don't you come back to California? And I went to my dad, and I said, you know, I want to go back to California. And he said, Cindy, if you're going to drink, you're going to drink anywhere. My dad kind of got it. I don't know if he got it when Clancy said that to him or what, but one day I went to him, like when I was drinking, I said, I'm gonna kill myself, my life is a mess. And he said, go ahead, I'm going golfing. and you know, these people have been like being really good to me, too good to me for a long time. But so I came back out here, and I lived in Hawaiian Gardens, and we had a condominium in Hawaiian Gardens. And I came on Mother's Day, and that's the kind of person I am when I'm new in AA and I'm newly sober. I should never left on Mother's Day. I probably went to church with my mother and then left. But I would never do that today. Today I fly home to be with my mother on Mother's Day and on her birthday. And I'm not proud of that, but that's the kind of person I am. And I came out here, and on Monday I wanted to be sober. I want to be sober. And I know to be sober, I need to be with you guys. And on Monday, I went to the Seal Beach Monday night speakers meeting. And I raised my hand when they said, ask for out-of-town people. And I told my name was Cindy. I just moved here from Pittsburgh. And this gal turned around at break, and she said, hi, my name's Cheryl. Welcome to our meeting. And I said, I know you from somewhere. And I said, where do you go to meetings? She said, I go to the Pacific Group. And I said, I sat next to you at my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. She was the gal Clancy sat me next to. Now, I didn't know about that Pacific group. I was there. I went there for like 3 weeks while I was walking through that court stuff. But I didn't get it, because what I said to her is, how long have you been sober? And she said, 12 months. And 12 years. And she seemed pretty and nice, and I asked her to be my sponsor. I didn't know how mean she was. She was terrible. She was meaner than anybody's sponsor. And but the thing is with her, is she tells me what to do and I do it. I would tell other people how mean she was, but I never debate with Cheryl. I don't debate with her. I don't talk back. And, that's just the way. I don't know why that's like that. I want to be sober. my sponsor would say, if you're going to be a greeter, wear a skirt. No one else was wearing a skirt, you know, and I wanted to roller skate to the meeting. I'd call and say, sure, I'm going to roller skate tonight. Would it be okay if I wear shorts? No. 4 months ago, this is the truth. I'm going to be 23 years sober in 2 weeks. I was interviewing for several months looking for a job for, well, several, 10 months. And I've been working 3 weeks, though. But anyways, I have all these pantsuits now. So I called Cheryl. I'm the secretary of a Sunday night meeting in El Toro. And I called Cheryl. I said, hey, Cheryl, would it be okay if I wear a pantsuit tonight? You have all these pantsuits from interviewing. And this is what she said. No. And then silence. And she goes, you know, Cindy, I could go into it, but no. And I hung up, and I said to Mike, why did I call? And I went and I put a skirt on, and I went to the meeting. But that's just how it's been for Shell. She's taught me to be a good example of the program that saved my life. She's taught me to sit in my seat and not be disruptive. To not maybe that I'm going to miss the message, but it might be that I'd cause someone else to miss the message. She taught me to return my grocery cart where it says, return carts here. And, you know, I found that my life has gotten better since I've just followed the rules of life. And that boyfriend and I got married, and we moved down here to Mission Viejo, and, you know, he turned up to be an alcoholic. No big surprise. But he came to AA, and he'd come and he'd go, and there just came a time when it wasn't good living that way anymore. So we divorced, and my sponsor told me to do it with dignity and grace, and I really didn't know what that meant. And I asked an old timer what that meant. She said, without all the drama, Cindy. And my sponsor told me not to make it a big thing in my home group, which was the Wednesday night speakers meeting in Laguna. And you know, a lot of people say, oh, that meeting's so late and it's on Wednesday. And I feel the same way. I don't want to go there on Wednesday. But this is how I got stuck going there. One night I called Cheryl moaning again, telling her, this was about, I don't know, 12, 14 years ago, and I go, you know, the meetings down here, they don't seem like they're structured, blah, blah, blah. She said, Cindy, now meanwhile, she's never been to that meeting. She goes, you need to go to Dr. Paul's meeting in Laguna Beach on Wednesday nights. And I thought, why did I call her? You know, why did I tell her that? I live in Mission Viejo. Doesn't she know how far that is? But I go there on Wednesdays. She's never seen me there, but I just go, and it's where that's my home group. That's just how I am with her. And, you know, so we divorced, and AA taught me that just how to suit up and show up for work. And I've been fortunate in my work that I used to always have a job. And then other people worked, they had master's degrees, and I wanted a master's degree because they had one, you know, how we could get, you got one, I want one. And so I went to Pepperdine and I got a master's degree, and my sponsor was there and my parents were there and my brother and my sister-in-law, my niece and my nephew have never seen me take a drink. We rented this big stretch limo. We drove to Pepperdine that day, and my family was there, my sponsor. And, you know, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. I sat in those classrooms. Some days I didn't hear nothing. And I'm not real smart. But I got to the class on time, and I stayed till the class was over. And I did my commitments when the commitment was due. And I kissed up as much as I could to those professors. Always. I wish I would have known that as a kid. I was a pain in the ass in school. Always. But life has been good to me. There was a group of us that would go have coffee on Wednesday night. And Mike was in our group. And I always liked Mike. And I even hooked him up with this girl I used to work with. Too bad she was like the vice president of the company, but they broke up. And then when I was divorced, Mike was helping me in my townhouse, and I thought one night, am I liking him or am I like really lonely? And I talked to all my girlfriends, because I learned in here, if you got a question or something on your mind, ask people. And I talked to my sponsor, I talked to all the girls at the gym and all my girlfriends in AA. And one night he took me home from a meeting, and And I said, why don't you come in for a minute? And we would never do that. It was just like, okay, bye, see ya. And he came in, and I sat down on the couch, and he's standing there. And we're like 48 years old, okay? And he's standing there, so I'm on the couch. I stand up, and then I sit down. I go, you know, Mike, I'm starting to like you, but I don't want it to ruin our friendship. And he goes, I like you, too. So I gave him a little kiss, and I said, okay, well, see you tomorrow. And he went home, and I went upstairs, and I got on my knees at my bed, and I looked up, I said, you know, how did you know? And then I smiled, like, how did he know? But I'm one of those people that I've always tried to hold on. You know, that marriage I had before, I wanted to hold on and manipulate it and make it happen. And that's how I've always been with everything. And when I just let go and let God, it just fell right in my hand for me. And you know, we dated and we got married, and we have a good life today. We don't have children. We have a big sheepdog that our life revolves around, this dog Mochi, and Alcoholics Anonymous. We have Alcoholics Anonymous in our home, and thankfully we sponsor people and they call the house, and it's good because it takes us out of us. You know, there's two alcoholics in that house. We need, I don't know what we need, a mommy. We need a mommy in our house to kind of say, okay, you two, you know, because it's all about me some days, and it's all about Mike, and then this economy, and this year has been, it's been a tough one. I want to tell you a couple things about that. You know, my family, I'm on good terms with my family today, and I've seen my mom in the last couple of weeks. I was with my dad. I was lucky enough to speak in Phoenix, where my dad lives, a couple of weeks ago, and I stay with my dad, and we have a good relationship. And several years ago, my mom had open heart surgery, and my brother and I went together. And my brother's proud of his sister. And there was a family member of ours that passed away several years ago. My brother was talking to another family member, and I was walking over to him, and I don't know what they were talking about, but my brother looked my way, and he said to the man he was talking to, "Speaking of ladies," and he said, "My sister," and you know, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. If it wasn't for you guys, I don't know where I would be. Just drink a Listerine somewhere. And my sister-in-law's brother turned up alcoholic, and about 2 months ago they called the house, and you know, they wanted to get some ideas from us, and he was in the hospital in Fullerton with pancreatitis and third time around, you know, but he doesn't need meetings and whatever. But our friends went there to say, we hear you have a problem with alcohol. And just to, I was so proud that those are the kind of friends I have today. Friends like you, that we do that kind of thing for each other. And I'm very grateful that you asked me to be a part of the meeting, Betty, and I love this meeting. And thank you all for listening.